Well, I think it tells us that Nick Clegg will be getting quite excited, because it shows the Tory party just isn't getting the kind of support that they can go into an election really confident of getting a majority. They might get a majority. They might even, with this lead, this is a 7-point lead, all sorts of discussions going on about marginal seats and differential swings. And so I wouldn't rule out a majority Tory government, but it shows they can't be sure of getting it. And if they don't, what's going to happen? Well, then we'll debate that endlessly. It also shows Labour's doing okay. They're not doing brilliantly, but they're doing better than the sort of second part of last year. They're on 30%. Lib Dem's quite solid on 20, down one on our last poll, unchanged on another more recent ICM poll. So Labour and the Lib Dems cruising along pretty firmly. Tories beginning to falter, and that'll alarm Cameron.
Michael White in our Westminster office, you said in your blog yesterday that this is shaping up to be an interestingly unpredictable election, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is. And I wouldn't disagree with a lot of what Julian has just said, with the greater emphasis than him on differential swings and all the work and all the money from Lord Ashcroft and others which the Tories are putting into the marginal seats. I spoke to a Tory MP with a marginal seat, which won't be marginal soon, last night, and he said, you know, we're quite confident about them. So do bear that in mind.
Oh, yes. But one thing that this does, of course, is maybe redirect some of the direction that the Tory campaigning goes. If they begin to need to protect the ones they get to get the largest party, then they can't put their cash into the really extreme seats where they can get a big majority.
So but as we both know, they've got an awful lot of money.
Oh, they have.
And one of those aspects of the election, the media, the attack dogs won't be interested in the Tories' sources of money until they're in government. When they're in opposition is the time to ask questions, but they don't. Anyway, we're not talking about that. Yes, it is an unpredictable event. I'm still reluctant to abandon my long-held view that the Tories will have a small majority, but it is looking more hung parliament, and I agree that Nick Clegg has some reason for confidence, although, in fairness to David Cameron, it's because of David Cameron's failures, not Nick Clegg's successes, that the Lib Dems are looking quite good.
Yes.
Julian, what are these failures?
Of David Cameron? Well, I think if you look at the poll, there seems to be some anxiety about Tory policy on the public services. So maybe that talk of cuts, which plays very well with the Tory base, plays well with quite a lot of the media, a lot of blogs. Maybe some voters looking at the cold weather, snow still continuing, beginning to think, do I really want public service cuts?
Too soon. That's the issue. That was the battle between The Economist last week.
That was The Economist battle. But I think there's a general sense of anxiety. So on the poll, we've got a figure for care for the elderly, which party's the best policy. Now, obviously, people don't know the details of the policies, nor do we, actually. Parties haven't explained them all. But we do know instinct of the voters. Labour's have got an 8-point lead on that. So things like that, where the Tory party have been pushing quite hard, people are still going towards Labour. And on the economy, Tories are ahead, but not as much as they were.
Now, what about the issue of Brown's personality? So to what extent does this poll reflect these claims that have been made in the extracts from Andrew Rawnsley's book?
Well, the timing of the poll's important. We have to emphasise the polling started on the Friday. Most of it was done on Saturday over the weekend. Some of it was done on Sunday, but only about a fifth. So people weren't responding to The Observer, even if they'd had time to read all of those great words in The Observer on Sunday. They haven't digested them. Maybe another poll will come along later in the week and show it's really hit Labour. But just as importantly, perhaps, the Piers Morgan stuff a week before doesn't seem to have boosted Labour either. Maybe the public are a bit resistant to some of these things that get us all excited in the media.
What's your take on Rawnsley's book, Julian? I mean, do you think these revelations, if they are revelations about Brown's bad temper, will have much effect on the voters?
I'd say it was all true, so we must remember that. I don't think the book's wrong. The question is, A, does it tell us anything we didn't know? And B, if it does tell us something we didn't know, does it matter? I think probably quite a lot of voters were less aware than the Westminster media that Gordon Brown got a bit grumpy, occasionally got very depressed, sometimes wondered whether he was up to the job. Maybe that'll have an effect. The character does really shape votes. On the other hand, there isn't some fact in this book which means he's going to have to resign or anybody else is going to have to resign. Nobody seems to have lied about it. It's all just been a bit grim and depressing. So maybe it won't have a huge effect.
Mike, do you think it matters whether Gordon Brown's got an explosive temper?
Yes, of course it matters. People don't particularly warm to bullying, but again, I don't think it's much of a secret. You don't only have to look at Gordon Brown to realise he's not a little ray of sunshine, and there have been plenty of stories, some of them written by Mr. Rawnsley in his earlier book, about the Brown-Blair explosive tempers. I'm looking one day for a backlash which says, poor old Tony Blair, wasn't he put upon by all these people? No wonder he fought a war in Iraq. At least it gave him something to do that Gordon wouldn't interfere with, make life difficult over, which is roughly what happened. Because, you know, the more you know about Gordon's operation, then the more you know it must be quite difficult. Of course, you have to add that you know, being a bully doesn't make you an ineffectual or inappropriate leader. We know plenty of people who are bullies. Sir Alex Ferguson is a prime example. That horrible man, Phil Green, who runs the retail empire, he was awful to one of our colleagues down a phone line a few years ago. And, of course, the Daily Mail yesterday ran a very sympathetic leader to Mr. Brown about bullying. And hardly a surprise, really, because the editor of the Daily Mail, Paul Dacre, a great fan of Gordon's, despite everything. They're fellow provincial Puritans, thinks Mr. Dacre. And, of course, Mr. Dacre is Fleet Street's most famous bully.
Yes, and Ronsley's book describes Brown and Dacre going to Shakespeare together.
It's a horrible thought, isn't it? Let's assume they went to see Macbeth or Richard III.
I think it might have been Hamlet, actually.
Well, that would be fine for Gordon, wouldn't it? Bob Marshalland, who's the Labour MP, who spent 10 years plotting to get rid of Tony Blair, 6 months after he'd succeeded in installing Gordon, who, like many other left-wingers he thought would be left-wing, started going around saying to people, he told me in a bar, Gordon Brown, he's a Shakespearean tragedy, the indecision of Hamlet, the impotent fury of King Lear, the suspicion of Othello. Pause. Thank God we got rid of the Macbeths.
Mike White in Westminster, Julian Glover, many thanks.